Welcome to Conversation Street, episode 162. It's a special episode, but you don't know why yet, do you? No, we're talking about the episodes...
They might do if I read the episode description. No, but any publicity.
We don't know if this is even going to work. We're recording this before all the interesting stuff is actually happening. But we're going to be
Coronation
talking...
Coronation Street is the interesting stuff to see.
We're going to be talking about the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 10th and the 14th of August. This episode, amongst other things.
Yes, because it's our third year anniversary of the podcast this week.
Or it will be when you listen to it, maybe.
Yes, this is, we apologise already, this is not going out on the weekend for a very good reason. But it's going to go out in time for when we first had our podcast, which was the 18th of August 2012, when we first released.
All those years ago.
I know, 3 years later and we're still going strong.
We were still in
Still going
up.
Anyway.
No.
People are obviously interested in hearing what we've got to say about Coronation Street. I still
can't
even get the name of the programme right after all these years. Anyway,
Coronation Street has been going longer than us, hasn't it?
Yes, a little bit longer than us.
Because we've got Corrie history to talk about.
Yes, we'll do that first. So
before our special secret surprise, which isn't a secret.
It might be a secret.
It's a secret.
It depends how people... download us, don't they? They might just be so eager to listen to us as soon as it comes in the podcast.
I don't read descriptions.
Oh, God,
if I have a podcast...
I do, I always do.
No, I just listen. I just listen in good faith.
It's going to be a quality show.
Exactly, every week.
People can't honestly do that for us.
No, they're like, should I listen to this rambling nonsense or not?
Anyway, Corrie History.
Talking of rambling nonsense.
Corrie History. Albert Tatlock, happy birthday to you this week, good sir. You're 120 years old. Dead, but still 120.
Wow, Ernest Bishop is 85 years old this week.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Happy birthday, you two bunch of curmudgeons.
50 years since Emmy and Millie got drunk, just like I did, on Stan Ogden's homebrew, believing it was tonic. Tonic, I didn't get tonic.
They thought
Does it have lemonade? What's the
No, I think they thought it was some kind of medical drink. Not like tonic, like gin and tonic tonic. They thought it was some kind of magical.
We don't have
healthy
that anymore, do we?
That's an old person's thing.
Tonic.
That,
you need
just
some tonic,
tonic
for that.
That's what Simon needs this week. He needs some sort of tonic on
I'm
his arm.
I'm going to use that more often now.
Well, that's what they thought it was, but it wasn't. He'd made his own beer. 10 years ago, since Lloyd bought Deb's share of streetcars. I've written on Deck's share of streetcars in the notes.
No, that's when he gave up his dream of being a mechanic and started becoming an entertainer. His good friend Ant.
Lloyd has been with streetcars 10 years this week, and Sunita discovered she was pregnant with twins 10 years ago this week.
So we'll have to wait 9 months or thereabouts for the twins' birthday, so we can just ignore them again. 5 years since Lewis Archer won £4,000 at Barlow's Bookies with a fraudulent bet.
The trickster.
And he left Audrey and Weatherfield.
That was also, of course, the Manchester tart incident when he was shoved the tart in Deirdre's face, to which she said, "Ken, do something!"
Classic words we can all live by.
Oh, Deirdre, we miss you.
Yeah,
because she had snogged Lewis, and the security camera got it, hadn't they? And then they were in Gail's house, were they? And they showed the security camera footage for some reason. I can't remember. But anyway. Gail put Manchester tight in Deirdre's face. And
well,
I know how he laughed.
That's Coronation Street history.
Yes. We're not going to do street talk next. Oh, no.
We've got something more exciting.
If we hadn't mentioned it before, we've got something exciting coming up. And, here it is. Okay, so today we're joined by a very special guest. We last saw Jenny Bradley being carted off by the cops after kidnapping baby Jack, but now the actress who plays her has kindly agreed to come on the podcast for an interview. It's Sally Ann Matthews. Sal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Very welcome. Hello.
Hello. Funny hearing you.
It is funny hearing you too, because I download the podcast, and then when I'm driving to Anglesey, which takes about 4.5 hours, that gives me a good run at listening to them. Either then or when I'm doing a bit of gardening.
Oh. So obviously lots of people that are listening to this today are going to be wanting to hear about you coming back to Corrie, which was just announced last week, but you're not really allowed to talk about that today, are you?
I'm not really allowed to talk about it. No.
Go over
it. Other than Jenny will be back.
So, and you'll be able to talk about it. It's at the Edinburgh Festival later on this year, is it?
It's in about 2 weeks' time or a week and a half's time. I'm going to do a soaps masterclass, which will be fascinating. There's myself and Kelly Bright from EastEnders, and there's Stuart Blackburn, Dominic Treadwell-Collins, Brian Kirkwood, Kate Oates, Darren Little.
Oh,
I know.
yeah, that's good. So that's
Glad
good.
I managed to get in on it.
A bit far for us to go from Southampton to go and see you, though, I think.
That.
So going back to your return to Usk Greens early this year, then, how did you feel about being invited back to Corrie after all that time?
Well, to be honest, they've been talking about it for so long that I'd reached the point where I thought, well, this is never going to happen. Since the 50th anniversary things, that's when they started to talk about it, but it just dragged on and on and on and on. But when I finally got the call, which was in the July of last year, I was thrilled, obviously. But then they didn't come back to me until October. And then it was another, I think, another 2 weeks before I could, or 3 weeks before I could say anything. So from July to October, having to keep a secret was just hellish. I'm rubbish at keeping secrets. But no, I was really excited. Yeah. And it's amazing. It's what's great about it is, maybe it's because it's in a different place, and Media City is stunning. It's huge. It's purpose-built. You've got everything there. That it didn't feel like I was going back to something in a way. It's weird. It was kind of
Like a new start.
strange. Pardon?
It's like a new start, really. Like a completely different experience.
It's the only thing I can equate it to is if you meet a family member that you didn't know you had, and you suddenly you feel a connection to them more than a stranger, but you don't know them. It's
I can imagine.
kind of weird. Yeah, but it's brilliant.
So, how did the filming experience change to what it had been like in the past then?
That's completely different, totally different. But I was used to that with doing other things, and obviously on Emmerdale we were doing six a week, so that was quite a punishing schedule anyway. This is a different way. They work it. They do the schedule and the blocking in a different way on Corrie. So that took a little while just to get my head around. So this it's the speed. I mean, when I first started Corrie, we did two episodes a week, and you did those episodes within Monday to Friday, and that was the end of it. Now you work one block, as we call it, so 1 week's worth of episodes takes 3 weeks to film.
Oh gosh.
So you start the first block, say, first five episodes, and then the following Monday, the next block starts. So you're in week two of the first block and week one of the first block, you see, of the second block. And then the following Monday, another block starts. So every Monday, a new block starts.
That sounds really difficult to get your hands on.
It's really difficult to try and explain it. So that's one block has its own director, first director, second director, thirds, runners, costume, makeup, props, lights, sounds, all its own unit, self-contained unit. And you're doing those five. But within the day, you might do a scene from the third block along. So in story order, 10 episodes, say episode 10. And then in the afternoon, you might go back to the first block and you'd be doing a scene from the second episode in story order.
And you don't get as much rehearsal time now as you used to, do
What's that?
you?
No, there's no rehearsal time. In the old days, we used to rehearse, used to block Monday afternoon, rehearse all day Tuesday, rehearse Wednesday morning, do a technical run Wednesday afternoon, always have Thursday morning off, and then do studio Thursday and Friday. Now you're in and you get the scripts about a week before. You have to do all your own homework. You go down to the floor, to the studio floor, or onto location, wherever you are, and you read through the scene with the director. You just read it and with everybody else. And then he says, right, we're going to be there, we're going to be there, we're going to be there, and do it.
Is there much time in the filming for like redoing bits or bloopers or outtakes or anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's very it's often, because it's the first time you've said it out loud as well, when the first time you read it. And then, so they'll kind of do a little walk through and a block, and then whilst they're setting up, the actors go off. So you've got time to go through it, and that's generally what happens, that, you know, you all go through it amongst yourselves, and if there's anything that pops into your head, you can go and speak to the director whilst the lights and the cameras and sound are getting themselves sorted. You've got about 15 minutes then, generally. But no, I mean, with regards to, I mean, with Michael Lavelle and Brooke and Alan, we have a kind of a take, what do you call it, like a take meter. So we like to get it all done in one. And if they like to take the mickey out of people who fluff it. And so that adds up to the take tally, if you like.
Yeah,
I can imagine that.
So who was in the lead then when you were there?
Oh, Luke, the guy who plays Luke.
Oh, right.
Oh, really?
They used to take the mickey out of him a lot, I think. Because he's just the new boy.
Yeah.
In that garage setup. So they used to take the mickey out of him quite a lot.
So when you started again as Jenny, did you know straight away what the whole story would entail?
Yes, but I didn't know how far it was going to go.
All right.
I didn't know how unhinged she might become. So I just basically knew the story of what had happened to her, and that was it. That was all I knew.
Okay. So they gave you the backstory of
Tom and
her life.
But they just said that she'd had a child who had died.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that she's going to become quite obsessed with Jack. And that was all I knew.
I see.
I mean, to be honest, it's a kind of a rolling process. They have their story conferences, and then they go to the story editors, and then they get written. So things can, it can be a movable feast as well.
Yeah.
What might happen, another idea might spark off something. So they don't, not going to definitively say, right, and then 6 months' time you're going to be on a balcony threatening to shut yourself off. So it doesn't quite work like that.
How much does audience reaction feed into how they change stories as they go along?
I've got no idea, actually.
Because I wonder, because I think people really enjoy Jenny acting a bit crazy, and I just wonder how much they sort of went, let's see how far we can go, because people are enjoying.
Well, by the time, though, the first kind of real sign you saw was when Jenny slapped Maria.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I'd pretty much done everything by then.
Oh, right. And people didn't like that, did they?
I loved it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
I ached like mad the next day.
Really?
Because you have a stunt arranger for everything. Anything physical, there's always a stunt guy there. And he was fantastic. And he makes you a warm-up beforehand. And I've never hit anybody in real life or pretend life. And so we had to do all this warm-up, and then we had to do it. And then the director, who was fantastic, Tony Prescott, he just shot it from so many different angles. And I really kept going for it, because he just said, there's absolutely no chance you can hit Sammy. And Sammy was amazing. That I kept just really swinging my arm. And it really aches the next day. It's like playing tennis against, I don't know, Martin and Navratilova or something. Yeah, so it was fantastic to do. But I think that was the first sign when that went out, which was end of April, that the viewers had seen her, like, be proper loopy.
Yeah, well, it was good that you knew what your motivation for that was, so that you didn't play it as outright psycho.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, because I've said this before, that I just kept playing the truth of the situation, because, to be honest, that was pretty much all I knew, that you had a child who died and that's the focus. And Tony Prescott that week when we were filming it kept saying, oh, she's evil, that Jenny, oh, like this. And I was going, she's not, she's really not. I don't know why he's thinking that. Then when I saw it, I was going, oh, my God, Sally, I'm that death stare you do. I wasn't, like, deliberately doing a death stare. I was just...
That's awesome, though. You need to save that up for other situations, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you see, my kids weren't surprised. They've seen that quite a few times.
So how else would you say that Jenny's character's changed since the 80s?
Well, I can't remember. What, it's going to be 30 years this December that I first started in Corrie.
Wow.
Can you believe it? 30 years. And I've not watched any of it and all of that before going back, but we're in the process of moving house, and I've found hundreds of blooming videos, and I've been transferring them. So I've been watching clips. I thought, oh, actually, she was, because she was quite stroppy and opinionated, and I'd not thought that. I thought she was quite nice and just troubled and just had a horrible time with her mother dying and her father trying to kill somebody, you know. So
yeah, you were involved in one of the biggest stories back then, weren't you?
In fact, I watched when I was doing it, and I just kind of been sticking the tapes in. I've got no idea what I've got, but I did see one scene when Jenny went to visit Alan in prison. I did watch that. So it was brill.
So who did you enjoy working with again after all this time then? Was it good to see you again?
It was lovely to work with Michael.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known him since before he was in Coronation Street, because he was a very good friend of my brother's.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
We're at Oldham Theatre Workshop together. And so I've known him such a long time. But we never really did anything together when I was in it before. There might be a group scene that Jenny was invited to a party and I was at Sally and Kevin's wedding, but didn't really have any scenes. So that was great to do. Barbara and I, thankfully, near the end, we got a bit more to do together, because we didn't really have a great deal to do with each other during the story. And then getting to know Brooke, she's hilarious. She's absolutely hilarious, that girl. She's one of the nicest, funniest people you'll ever wish to meet. She really is. So I had a great time. I know lots of people from other jobs. Hayley and Dan were both in Emmerdale when I was there. And other people that I've worked with in plays and other shows and things.
Is there anyone that you didn't get a chance to work with that you wanted to do scenes with, maybe?
I didn't do anything with Helen Worth. Oh, I did. I did a tiny little bit, but nothing really to count. And with Sue Nichols, I'd like to have done something with Sue.
Yeah. I just remember you were in the auction scene, weren't you?
I just suddenly came back to me, the auction scene, yeah.
That was the main one I remember when you were with kind of the expanded cast, but mostly you were with Kevin and
yeah. Yeah, I think that was. We had such a laugh doing those auction scenes. We did spend 3 days in the Rovers, but it was good fun to do. But yeah, that's pretty much the only one that was a communal scene. They don't really do those communal scenes anymore. Even in the Rovers, they can. If you've got a scene in the Rovers and you're sitting in the booth, you can often do that in isolation, and you finish your bit and you've gone whilst the rest of the scene's carrying on. You're actually upstairs having a cup of tea. So they're shooting down the other end.
So tell us about the public's reaction to your return. How did you find that?
Oh, well, I think initially it was very mixed, because there were lots of people that didn't watch Corrie then, weren't alive then, like you two.
We were just about alive, I love you.
So we wouldn't have a clue who Jenny was, and so just weren't really not interested. And then lots of other people who did, but then I think they were disappointed that she didn't come back and have scenes with Rita, which is what I think the fans of the show when Jenny was in it last time were expecting, and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it was very mixed, and then it was kind of like, who's this girl? She's weird. Who's that? And then you start getting messages, and it's terrible. Well, you know I love Twitter, but it's terrible reading stuff.
Yeah.
On there when they go, oh my God, she's a... And it's all like that. Very funny though.
Must have been lots of people giving you really good feedback as well though.
Oh yeah. They did. And particularly Fire Week.
Yeah.
Wig.
Oh yeah. The infamous wig.
Brilliant. That wig was got a massive reaction, and obviously the balcony stuff got lots of reaction. And people starting to feel sympathy for her and were cross with Kevin and Sophie, which was quite an interesting turnaround.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's one of the more complex kind of emotional storylines that we've seen, because quite often they like to have a villain who comes in and you don't have any sympathy for them at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Jenny's like been a character in it for years. It's easier to sympathise, and it's quite, at the end of it, you didn't really know who to feel sorry for, I don't think.
Yeah, you kind of like, oh, but I know she kidnapped him, but, you know, let her off.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah, it seems very difficult, because you go, well, I can't really condone somebody stealing somebody's child, but, you know, come on.
You've been nominated for the Bad Girl, haven't you, in the Inside Sofa ones, is it?
How mental is that? So exciting. But I'm up against some baddies though, so I've got no idea how it all works and whether there's a short list going on. And I've got no idea. But I was really excited. And I got to have a nice day getting dressed up and having my hair done, so that was fun.
So what other Corey stories have you been enjoying since now you're just back to being a viewer again? What are you liking at the moment?
Enjoying at the moment. Oh, I loved those scenes. Was it on Friday night with Steve and Rover, the dog?
Oh, I know.
There was a little scene on the stairs when Steve was talking to Rover and saying, "I'm doing all right." And
yeah, that was awesome. I love those. I love dogs.
Yeah,
anyway.
Jen was a big dog person, so
it was just. I like it when they take the time to just have a bit of a normal conversation, and it's not a, you know, it was about character, and it was kind of tying up all the depression stuff and showing that Steve's on the up.
Yeah.
You know, without kind of going, I'm about to throw a party to show I'm on the up. I thought that was fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to all the camping stuff.
Yeah, that's tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, that is tonight.
Oh, that should be fun.
So I'm looking forward to all of that. That should be fun. That should be some classic Corrie stuff. And then, I mean, the whole Callum, Bethany, Sarah, David storyline, I think is getting very exciting. And I think it's going to come to a big head.
Well, they've been building up for so long.
Yes, it has been. And there's lots of reasons why, you know, when you start a story as well for Corrie, people get pregnant, people are ill, things happen, and stories have to then be dropped or changed or altered or elongated accordingly. I mean, you know, a lot of people, there was an awful lot of issues that we had when we did Fire Week that people don't know about.
Yeah.
And that Fire Week took 5 weeks to film all in all. So at one point we had 25 episodes on the go. 25. I think I had 19. I was jumping between 19 episodes.
No, oh my goodness. I don't think there's room in my head for more than five ones.
So I did, my very last day was when, which made me laugh, when your podcast, when Maddie was in the hospital and Jenny went to see her, and you said, and it was Maddie started twitching like Lassie or sitting down the well. That was the very last scene I shot. And bear in mind, I was on screen for about 4 weeks after that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard work to kind of keep up how loopy you are at one point. Or,
oh yeah, that's true, because it was kind of a progression into madness as she went along. So you've got to, did you have like a scale of 1 to 10?
You just have to, you know, it is exhausting. It is mentally exhausting when you've got a story that involves a journey. It is quite exhausting. And because you've got a different director on each week, so there's, you have to do your own kind of story continuity. There's lots of people you can go and talk to, but as a result, Fire Week, there were a lot of issues with weather, with sickness, with things, and a lot of stories had to be changed at the last minute.
Really?
And that's just part and parcel of being in an ongoing program that can't afford to take a break, otherwise there's no episodes. Because there's no chance to catch up, so.
Yeah, that's true. When you were involved in the storyline with Maddie and the Fire Week, did you know that she was going to be killed off as part of your story, or?
Yeah.
You sent her to her doom outside.
It wasn't Jenny's fault.
I agree.
We completely agree.
Maddie did knee Jenny in the stomach. I know there was, people thought that she'd headbutted me. It wasn't. It was a knee to the stomach. You know, she ran off. It was her own silly fault. Police told her not to go there. It was her fault. It was Jenny. But, yeah, Amy loved. She loved doing all of that. And we had a great day. It was knackering that day because we did the bulk of those scenes. And they were in story order, but we think we did 11 scenes in one day. That was
wow.
That was a pretty exhausting day.
Mm. Yeah. Were you involved in any of the outside stuff on the Fire Week? I can't remember because I can picture you and
I'm really lucky that I was outside the Rovers and Kevin said that he's put Jack into nursery, and I went a bit loopy and walked off and went home and started packing. So that was the end of me with wedding celebrations and receptions and fire. Mm. I was just busily going loopy at number 13. It was great. I felt then they were coming into work as we were finishing. So they were coming in at like 7 o'clock at night, and then they were leaving at 6 the next morning for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I went in to shoot one scene one night at 10:30 at night in the thing, and it was like looking at a load of vampires. They were all big. They were all much paler.
Got off lightly there then.
I seriously did. I don't know how they did it. I really don't know how they did it. It's amazing. Punishing, not just to do those scenes, but and then I think after they finished the night shoots, Jane and Ali, they all had those scenes within the warehouse where there's just this smoke and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So they had like another week of that. So
gosh,
it's and they were doing other episodes as well. So at the same time, they were moving around onto different blocks. So they were doing, you know, pre-wedding stuff or pre-fire stuff and then post stuff at the same time.
Yeah. So what would you say overall was your most memorable day of filming for Corrie this year then?
I think probably Fire Week.
Yeah.
Because we did it all in story order and back to back. Balcony was about 3 days and we had to do it out of order because of Maddox, who plays Jack.
Mm.
And his hours and his availability. So we had to do scenes with him in when we could do them, and then I'd have to do the scenes that he's not in around that. And it was cold on that balcony.
Oh,
it was cold and there was an awful lot of snot.
Sign of a true actress. You create snot on cue. Yeah.
No, I think those three big standout episodes for me were, the one where I slapped Maria, those two, and then she lied about it, and Fire Week and Balcony stuff were amazing to be involved in. And I feel very lucky to have come back and had a great story and not to have come back and just been about, I don't know, missing cat or something.
Yeah, it was certainly memorable. I think they did a really good job putting you back into it, and then obviously you did a great job portraying the character Jenny again after all that time.
Well, thank you very much.
And I think that's about all we've got time for as well. So
this is going to be a very extended podcast.
I'm sure everyone will appreciate it. Thank you so much again for coming on. We've absolutely loved talking to you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. See you soon.
Yeah,
bye-bye. Bye.
Well, there we go. That was exciting, wasn't it? We're now going on to street talk. So what have we got to talk about this week? Well, batters be battered first. And they're all just battering each other now, basically, aren't they? She's like, I'm still finding this storyline quite interesting. I think this is the one this week that I'm like been most interested to see what happens next on it. That's been whatever we think of Leanne and Simon. I've been quite enjoying this time. Gemma? Maybe.
I told you I was eating a caramel and I couldn't speak. And you keep asking me questions about Leanne.
Good way to dodge the question.
I'm eating a caramel.
Okay. Robert returns as our next storyline. I'm finding him incredibly boring. But we did get to see about Deirdre's money, which was kind of interesting, I suppose. Next up, Northern Soulless, which is that Andrew is very soulless this week, wasn't she? Well, heartless, stealing Lloyd's record like that. Is it the end for Lloyd and Andrea? I think no. But anyway, we're left on the cliffhanger with that this week. We have then got Street Racer, which is Coronation Street's continuing attempts to try and make Luke and Maria's relationship interesting. Work on you this week, Gemma? No, shaking her head with caramel in her mouth. It's a big mystery. Maria's arranging to meet somebody. Who could it be? Could she be having an affair? No, she's just doing something nice. Anyway, we'll talk about more of that in more detail later. Then we got a little bit of Webster Wed's Window Washer, which is sadly only there for Monday. Quite enjoying that. And we'll finish off with sad Rover Returned. And then Rover returns to the Rose Return, but then Rover's returns again. And that's basically what happened with that one. Have you still eaten your caramel, Joe? Still not eating a caramel. Right, I'm going to get started with the Simon storyline, the Batters Be Battered. So, Leanne is on Monday convincing Simon to go and get some fresh air and have a kick around with Zidane in the park. So Simon, before long, starts getting into an argument with Leanne because she wants him to stay in and wait for a package, which are these football boots that he was supposed to be getting for his birthday weeks ago. And he doesn't want to stay in for them, even though he's moaning that he doesn't have these football boots. He's just desperate to get out away from her. So he's about to leg it out of the house. She grabs his arm and he kicks her leg, leaving a bloody gash. And I thought that this week the injuries that were sustained in that house were a little over the top.
I've finished my caramel now.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, I think that there is a poltergeist in that house, and I think that is the true cause.
There's something, isn't there?
Or everybody's got some kind of invisible ketchup on their hands and feet that only becomes visible when it comes into contact with someone else's skin.
Well, I don't know, because I thought they were supposed to be well hard up north. Like,
well, they are. No, you're going at it from the wrong angle. They're so well hard that just a casual kick will leave a bloody gaping gash.
Oh, you see? Yeah.
You're thinking they've got hard skin, but they don't. They've just got hard kicks.
But anyway, he's very guilty about what he's done.
Can I just say, before anyone wonders, my stance on this, Leanne, this week I felt so bad for Leanne. I felt really bad for her. I think she's going through a terrible time with this, and I take back everything I said about her. I think she's a wonderful character.
Wait a minute, there's the punchline.
Not really, no.
Oh.
That was great.
I would still take her side over Simon's. She was. She just needs to tell somebody about it, doesn't she?
We can get to it. We can talk about it at the end.
He gets himself in a mood about it, and he locks himself in the room, doesn't he? So she storms out to work, and so her mind's all over the place at the bistro. And then Zidane comes in. It turns out this is Simon did sneak off to go football with him later, and so Leanne starts getting worried. Or where could he be?
She starts deciding that even though she didn't know where he was a minute ago, it's very important that she finds him because he's snuck off. I don't know what she thinks he's possibly getting up to.
I have to say, his ability to sneak off to football practice does get markedly worse by the end of the week. Does quite a good job on Monday. Friday, not so good.
I mean, I know you've got to set boundaries, and it's really important to, you know, have your kids obey you when you tell them what not to do. But really, of all the things that can happen on Coronation Street, him sneaking off to football practice is probably, like, the least thing to ever worry about.
Yeah, but
he's not joining a cult or going off doing drugs or getting... Well, he did get drunk halfway in the week, but he wasn't going out to football to do that.
But she'd kind of grounded him, hadn't she? I mean,
I agree, but I still feel like if you're going to punish a kid, why don't you just take away his... say, right, you're only allowed to leave for football practice, no more computer games.
Yeah, she should just take away his Xbox, shouldn't
she? Take away some kind of thing that is a negative influence on his life.
Yeah.
Although the football boys did cause him to go off the rails
a little bit, but we'll get to that, won't we?
So anyway, Zidane helps Leanne to find Simon and with her wound.
He sees that her leg's bleeding.
Yeah, and she lies and says, oh, never, don't worry about that, where's Simon? And then Simon texts and says, I'm out with my mates. And so Zidane says, don't worry, he's just chilling out. So he comes swanning into the bistro later, and he doesn't give a crap about the fact that Leanne's mad or worried. And he says, oh, I'll see you at football, Zidane. And Zidane knows that he's in trouble and says, well, maybe you should talk to your mum about whether you'll see me at football or not. And then he says, Leanne, you need to change your dressing.
Yeah.
And then this causes an argument between Simon and Leanne about him going off.
Yeah, well, she sent his boots back, which is good on her, I have to say. That's kind of the most parental responsible thing that she's done, isn't it? Not letting him keep these boots. Because she could have said, oh, Simon, here's your boots, so you can keep them as long as you promise not to hit me anymore.
Yeah.
But you said take away something, so she did.
She can't do anything right, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he looks apologetic about it anyway.
This is what I know. You say this was a good storyline, but I say the whole storyline was far too Jekyll and Hyde-y for my liking. I've only ever been experienced a teenager from being a teenager. I haven't really hung around them a lot, apart from your sister when we first started going out, and she was a bit crazy. Well, she was. She was always a bit angry. One day it just snapped, didn't it? One day we went for Christmas, she was like, hello! Like, okay. The hormones have worn off at last.
I don't think Simon's reached that point yet.
But the whole thing was very much, oh, I'm sorry, Mum, smack, you deserved it, I hate you. I'm sorry, Mum, smack, you deserved it, I hate you. The whole storyline all the way through the week.
I know.
And it was snapping so rapidly. Normally it goes, it would go through an iteration in a week. So it starts at the beginning of the week, he's sad. Then in the middle of the week, he attacks her. And then at the end of the week, he asks, you know, for an apology. But this, it seemed like, even in an episode, it was just going round and round and round.
It was a bit, wasn't it? And I didn't say that I really loved this storyline. I'm just saying I think it was probably the most one that kept me watching the most out of all the other storylines.
Yeah, I agree. It was still compelling, but I still felt a bit like...
They're kind of rushing it, but they're also going around in circles.
Yeah. And I think, we keep saying this, we say this all the time about Coronation Street, that they go around in circles with storylines, and I understand it must be because they know that not everybody watches every single episode, and they have to keep repeating storylines in, you know, with themes within the storyline to make sure that everybody knows exactly what's happening with some storylines. Mm. Even though I don't agree, I think that's annoying. That's probably why, surely, maybe. That must be one of the reasons why they do it. But you don't have to do it several times in one episode for people to understand. We're not goldfish.
Mm. And I suppose the problem with this storyline as well is by the end of the week, apart from there being more hittings either way, there wasn't a whole lot that had changed. I mean, now he's hurt and she's hurt now, but when Ken got involved at the end of the week, I was really hoping that he would be let in on it, just so we could move on in a different direction.
That, don't we? We have to get to that. Because a lot happens between the beginning.
Oh yeah,
the
Wednesday
and
stuff
the
was good.
So
he's like saying, "I'm sorry, I know I shouldn't hit girls."
Back, yeah. And she says, "You shouldn't hit anyone," which I agree with. Don't start saying, "Don't hit girls." It's silly. Don't hit anybody. And he says, "Oh, I just get really angry." So I, all the way through, I'm just thinking this is going to be like an anger management storyline or something.
Well, possibly.
Because they make a big deal about the fact that he just gets angry and lashes out.
Hmm.
Although I would have thought it was more just his frustration because he's been through so much crap in his life and it's completely powerless. Everything bad that happens to him, you can't stop it. It must be horrible.
I think it's supposed to be a lot to do with that as well. It's a whole mixture of teenage hormones and everybody dies around him and, you know.
Sad.
Anyway, they're in a happy place by the end of the episode.
As she keeps saying, all the way through, we're going to have a clean slate from now on. This is what she said to him last week and he got mad, remember? Mm.
Yeah.
So she says,
invite your friends around to the bistro for some burgers on Wednesday.
Exactly.
But she's still looking troubled.
Looks troubled over his shoulder for the hug. on Wednesday, Simon's so happy he's inviting everybody and all his mates show up and he's got a friend with a trendy hat. He's some kind of hipster child.
I'd love to think that little actor's mum says, right, just wear your hat today.
Wear your hat.
It makes you look stupid, but it'll make you stand out.
It'll make you stand out. They won't forget you. Don't worry, they'll be like, oh, that boy in the hat's very good.
So they're ordering burgers, aren't they, from Robert's, and delicious burgers. We have a little bit of Steph showing off her football skills by trying to do some keepy uppies.
I like the way that whenever a sport gets mentioned, it seems to me like Steph was in the team at school and beat everybody.
Yeah.
I like that.
Although I think her football leaves something to be desired. Tisha Mary put on Twitter afterwards that skill was all hers and she didn't actually mean to break the glasses on the table, so I don't know. Anyway, it makes them spill their drinks. So
I don't know what the point of that was.
No, I don't either, particularly.
I think it genuinely was a mistake and the people just thought, oh, this is funny.
Leave it in.
So what is Simon's mate?
Do you remember what his name was? We wrote it down later, but anyway, the main friend, Kyle is the name. I remembered it from South Park. He says that, I stay all night playing stay until 2 o'clock playing on Call of Duty and stuff. And Simon's like, yeah, me too. The thing is, Simon probably, because Simon's like, oh, isn't that an 18 game? But he's been playing blimmin' zombie vampire whatever, hasn't he? And it sounds like the sort of stuff he's been playing, isn't it? Exactly, PG. I mean,
it depends on if it's like Plants vs. Zombies, where it's cute zombies versus cute vampires.
I think, maybe. But I don't think it is. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, I think
the idea is that Simon will start to think that Leanne coddles him too much and treats him like a child and all his mates get to play 18 games and he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, he goes and he says, and the guy says, oh, I like drinking. And Simon's like, oh, vodka's my favourite. It wasn't last year. It was a couple of years ago that he got drunk before, wasn't it? But that was in the middle of Peter's, drinking fiasco. And he finds some wine underneath it. But he certainly knew what he was doing this
delicious
time.
Delicious wine.
When he went and got a £50 bottle of vodka from behind the bar. Peer pressure is terrible. Anyway, he managed to sneak it into the drink by telling Leanne that there's burgers raw in the middle. So when she's off taking it to the kitchen, he sneaks it and they all have a share around it. Meanwhile, Rita and Emily show up for some comedy relief, arguing over who's got the coupon for one for two for one or whatever at the Bistro. And of course, they get sat down next to the boys, who are getting a little bit raucous by now, and Simon is looking a bit queasy.
Jan says, shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up, everybody. Simon gets up to go to the toilet to be sick in the middle of being lectured, and Leanne immediately realises they've been drinking, because I guess it must smell of alcohol, and starts shouting and saying, where did you get it? Where did you get it from? What is it? What have you been drinking? And they say, oh, Simon did it. It's all his fault. He stole some vodka. So she says, right, I'm phoning your mums. And then she frog marches Simon out, who still is very sick, takes him back home, tells him off, because she could, you know, the whole thing could go pear-shaped now. Mm-hmm. They could lose their license if everybody finds out that the kids have been drinking.
Yeah.
She says, he's not listening. And she's saying, I think you should know better than this because of everything your father went through. And he's like, oh, you're saying father like son. And she says, no, I'm going to have to speak to somebody about you. This is too much. You're too much to me. And he says, I would rather go to care than live with you, and then he shoves her.
Hmm.
And she's really scared of him.
Yeah, I don't know where this whole idea of him not liking Leanne comes from. I think I say this all the time, but it's like, it suddenly just came out of nowhere, didn't it, that he doesn't like living with Leanne. The song's shone out of her bum,
no,
like, 5 years ago.
No, but I think that's what teenagers are like. I think they do say, I hate you. It's like a joke, isn't it?
Do you think the fact that she's not his actual birth mum means he thinks he can kind of get away with saying it? Because, like, when you say that to your real mum, you kind of know that you're stuck with her anyway. But I think if he pushes enough, then he knows that he could get taken away from her easily, maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
What did you think about the way that Leanne told off the boys in front of everybody in the bistro? I thought that she was maybe a little bit over the top with it, especially if she wanted to keep it quiet that young children were drinking in her establishment. I mean,
I don't know how I would have handled that if I'd been her. It would have been absolutely terrifying, because they could all get really sick. You could be in so much trouble. I mean, is there, you know, how far does the responsibility, there must be a law that you can't leave alcohol unattended or something like that.
Maybe.
Because there was nobody behind the bar when Leanne went in.
No, I suppose.
It's correct. I don't really know how.
It's not Leanne's fault. I mean.
No, but say for example, one of the parents decided to sue them. Would they have had a chance, or would the judge have said, you know, it's one of those things where, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? How much of the responsibility is on the establishment?
Is it that they left the booze unattended, or is it that Leanne, as the parent in charge of that group of children, left them unattended, and she shouldn't have done that, maybe?
Yeah, I think she's pretty much in trouble.
At school, we're not supposed to leave the children unattended, and
especially
if anything,
not
to
around
them,
the vodka.
Exactly. Stay away from my desk. if anything was to happen at school and the children were left unattended, then it'd
you're
be the teacher. Yeah,
oh,
exactly. So Leanne was, I suppose,
in
charge. Exactly there. So it probably would have been her fault, and then that would have then spread to the restaurant. But anyway,
Either way,
I was one of the other diners there, I might have said something. I mean, if Norris had... If Emily had invited Norris to share her coupon with her rather instead of Rita, he'd have been right on the phone, dobbing Simon in the bistro.
Yeah, but what are you supposed to say? You know what I mean?
Underage drinking.
If I was another person in there, I would not consider it to be any of my business.
Well, that's why it's good that it's not
gone.
Norris, because everything he thinks is his business.
I would have said to you, oh my god, how exciting. Like that time, do you remember we went to go see Sinister in the cinema, and a woman brought in with her about six under 10-year-old. They must have been between the ages of 6 to 10, all wearing pyjamas, small young children, brought them down to the front of the cinema to watch Sinister.
And as responsible adults, all we did was go,
everybody in the cinema was like, what the hell? okay. And then it was the scene where they're all burning
spoilers.
To death. Yeah, just a spoiler. They're all burning to death in a car. And I was just literally about to get up to go, I'm going to go and tell somebody that, because this is, I can't. First of all, I thought it was funny. And then the more horrific things started to happen, the more I started to actually feel like, no, I can't just sit here and watch these poor innocent children be ruined by this film. But before I got up, a woman went out and then came back with a manager who went, I don't know what the hell you think you're in here for, but this is an 18 film. And they all got escorted out.
Filed out, didn't they? Anyway,
that was that, a bit that was of a hot version, topic, but I don't know what. I mean, it's already happened. There's nothing you can do. You can only get people in trouble.
Yeah. Now, I would hope that Rita doesn't mention to Norris or anything over the cabin or anything.
Oh, she knows she's a terrible gossip. She got herself in trouble telling Ken, didn't she?
I think they'll probably get away with it. Oh, I don't know. Will they get away with it, though? Or is it going to be something that's going to come like next week or the week after? Or is like somebody from the Gazette going to come round? Oh, or God, I don't know. Anyway.
I hope that's the end of it. So on Friday, Leanne's just apologising to parents, saying, oh, I'm really sorry. Simon won't be going to football anyway, so don't worry about that. And then out slinks Simon, asking for a paracetamol and apologising. And then she says, he hears her saying, he's not going to football anymore, and he starts protesting this.
Yeah.
And when she says no chance, he flounces back off again.
Meanwhile, Rita is talking to Ken in the shop, and it seems saying about, oh, Simon's not coping well with his grief over Deirdre and Cal, blah blah blah. And then she mentions that he was drunk in the bistro, and Ken of course goes, what? Aghast is all I can say.
So Ken then finds Leanne in the street and says, oh, Rita told me Simon's a drunk. And she says, no, it's fine. It's sorted. All sorted. It's both fine. And he doesn't look convinced. And nor should he be, because this is not the first time that he has spoken to Leanne about something strange that's happened between her and Simon. And she has refused to talk about it and says everything's fine. Like the time that she dropped him off when he hit her.
Yeah, the first time, wasn't it? When he threw the remote.
And says, oh, I can't deal with him right now. Please, can you just take him? And Simon's going, Mum, why? What? Please don't leave me. And I just feel in my heart that this storyline is headed straight for everybody thinks Leanne is abusing Simon.
It seems
and then
like
Simon
the,
says, yes, she is abusing me because he hates her.
Yeah.
Because if all of the evidence points completely to that happening.
How much bruising has he left on her at the moment? Because the wrist thing was from Dan, wasn't it? But she's got the cut on her leg and I don't know what else.
No. There's no other physical evidence. And also, let's not forget that if you are having an altercation with somebody, even if you attack them, you could still be the one that ends up with the wound.
Yeah,
so it doesn't really make any difference. And I just think this is where it's heading.
Mm.
So anyway.
He sneaks off to football later.
He sneaks off.
We say
off,
sneaks, but he kind
he
of
walks out in
tiptoes
front of her face.
Noisily. Yeah.
Well, she's turned around and he's just walking out the door.
Yeah, so then she has a bit of a wrestle with him, doesn't
she? Well, they wrestle and then he starts fighting back and he grabs her hair and they're tussling around and then she sort of like flips around and pushes him. And
judo flip.
And he... No, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He lands with his arm on the corner and makes a huge, massive wound again. This paper-thin skin that they've all got.
Yeah, so they basically just apologise to each other, don't they?
Well,
again.
Well, he says, did you do it to get me back? You little wretch, of course I didn't. And then she's like, well, why did you shove me? It's like, why did you do that? Why did you? And then he says, oh, it really hurts. So she says, I've got to take you to the medical centre to get it seen to. And then on the way, who do they meet but Rita, who's all like, oh, how interesting.
Let me poke my nose in, please.
How concerning. So Simon goes in and needs stitches, and the nurse says, oh, it's a nasty fall. Simon wants you to stay outside. I think it must be because he wants to be brave about it. And Leanne's like, oh, my boy is rejecting me again.
Yeah, so Rita obviously then goes and tells Ken, so he heads up to the hospital. And
medical centre.
I think they're at the hospital. Were they? I don't know. Was it the medical centre or was it the hospital?
She said she was going to the medical centre.
I don't know at the end of the day.
Does it really matter?
Can they do that? They can't do those stitches at the medical centre. Anyway,
wherever they went. They went somewhere.
Ken goes and finds them and swiftly whisks Simon away back home, doesn't he? Because he wants to know what's going on. Because his suspicions are starting to get aroused.
And he says, Rita told me about it. And she goes, oh, why did Rita tell you? Which is another thing that you would say if you were abusing your child. Like, I don't want Rita to be going around spying on me.
Yeah.
Like when she dropped Simon off for the first time, take him because I can't deal with him right now. And she was really angry and he was really scared and upset.
Yeah. That's
that is true. Exactly what he would, what the situation would be like if she had just whacked him one.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, they go back to number one, don't they, for some cake and squirty cream. And Ken is trying to get Simon to open up and say what happened. So Leanne says, look, Simon, you need to tell your granddad the truth. But he, and that's when it's the cliffhanger, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is he going to tell him and that's a cliffhanger? Or is he not going to tell him that's a cliffhanger? It was he didn't tell him. And then Ken had to go and take Eccles for a walk so that Simon and Leanne could apologise to each other yet again. And Simon is seemingly petrified with the idea that Ken would know that he's been hitting Leanne.
Well, because surely, as a boy yourself, you would have been brought up with the idea that you can't hit girls.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but
like, being a girl, I don't think I would ever be scared of people finding out if I'd hit somebody. Because I think that people don't really care if a girl does stuff like that, because they don't think, number one, that we're that aggressive, and number two, that we can hurt people as much.
I suppose I'd be feeling the same if I was in Simon's position.
Yeah, like, number one, boys shouldn't hit girls. Everybody, like, that is a thing that people say. Number two, he's going to be on a par of strength with her, if not stronger than her. He's the same size as her.
Hmm. I don't know how much kind of authority Ken kind of commands over Simon. Is Ken in Simon's eyes like the scary, strict granddad? I can't particularly
maybe he's
see
just,
that.
On the one hand, afraid of letting his granddad down because he probably looks up to him, and on the other hand, he's like, he knows that Ken's been through a lot of.
I don't think he'd be thinking about that particularly. I think he's too young to think about that. But anyway, they don't tell Ken anyway, do they?
So he
goes off and he gets a fitness test with Zidane at the end of the episode for some reason, because Zidane is still
Why they did it, so that they could have another scene where he's got his heart rate monitor on and then Zidane says, tell your mama you really hurt your arm.
Yeah.
And then, oh, why is your heart going up like that? Let's make a casual joke about hostage situations.
I know, when he mentioned that hostage situation, it's like, are you doing that on purpose because you know that they've just been in a hostage situation 3 weeks ago?
Zidane, if you keep bringing up hostages, I'm going to explode at you. See what I did there? It's not funny, is it?
Anyway, that's the end of the episode, basically, isn't it? They go home, Simon apologises again, and Leanne is very teary at the end of the episode. They've been watching something together on the sofa, and see Leanne saying, I'm sorry, it'll be okay, and it seems to be she's starting to believe that she is the evil one, isn't she? Because she's blaming herself for it, and she hasn't got anyone to talk to about it.
Doormat.
I don't know what's going to move the storyline on.
She needs to get him help. She's right. She needs to stop thinking that she's doing the right thing for him by hiding this and sweeping it under the rug and go and get him some bloody help. Because he's obviously, it must be hormonal or emotional or something. It's not normal for a little boy to go around whacking people and making great big bloody welts in their leg.
Mm. She can't get Peter because he's off swanning around the Caribbean or wherever, isn't he?
The problem is that a boy his age is turning into a man. The stigma of like domestic abuse or violence against women could very well shadow his life. If you know, they've got to be really careful. She needs to get him help as soon as possible, because if he turns into a, you know, if he gets too old and starts doing it, it's going to be down the Young Offenders Institution.
But
isn't it
surely isn't she worrying as well that if she goes and gets him help, then she's going to be then opening herself up to the scrutiny of, oh, hang on a minute, what's this? You've been.
Are you even his real mum?
No, not are you his real mum. Hang on a minute, why has he got these marks?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She doesn't want it. Before, if she'd have got him help before she'd got hurt him,
yeah,
then it'd have been fine. But now, if she asks for help, then she's going to be under investigation as well. So,
I also wonder, is she even legally his guardian?
I don't remember.
I don't think she is. Has she ever adopted him?
I do not remember.
Because she's only ever, she's got really got nothing to do with him. They never signed any paperwork, I'm sure.
One of our listeners will tell us if they did.
Never got married?
No, they did.
But even if they did get married,
yeah, they did on the deathbed after the tram crash.
You still have to adopt the child, because this is what David and Kylie went through.
Hmm.
David never adopted Max.
I honestly don't know. I wouldn't be able to say either way.
So maybe she goes, oh, I need help for my son Simon. They'd be like, oh, according to this piece of paper, he's not your actual son. So you have to take him back and stick him in the back here until you can come and bring the paperwork to claim him back.
Fine.
All right.
Right.
Didn't know it was that easy.
Should we go on and talk about Robert's storyline now, which is, I'm trying to find it on our notes. Here we go. I did enjoy how Tracy's got Amy skiving around the shop for the whole of the week.
She's not fooled. She knows what's going on.
That's what Leanne needs to get Simon to do, basically. So she is still determined to be a better mother, and she's decided at the beginning of the week that Robert is history. There was this thing about Sophie wanting to do a memorial for Maddie, isn't there? Which doesn't get brought up again later in the week.
Doesn't get brought up again, but she's... first of all, she meets up with Sophie in the cabin where Rita's given her the travel magazine that she ordered. Magazine. And she's like, oh, sorry, I should have cancelled it. I don't want to.
And Tracy's just like there looking and like, my God.
Who buys it?
Somebody bought it in the end. No, Mary bought it in the end, didn't she?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she had something about clubbing in Ibiza or something.
Yeah.
And she says, no, maybe... I don't even remember if Tracy was there at the time, but we've got it under this storyline, so hey.
I don't remember, but she comes into the shop later, doesn't she? Because Sophie brings all of Maddie's stuff to Barlow's to sell off, and Tracy gives her £200 for it, doesn't she? Because obviously she feels completely guilty about being partially responsible for Maddie's death, and Sophie just thinks, look, I know you don't think it's worth that, but you're just doing it for Maddie's memorial. So she's sort of none the wiser.
She says, yeah, but don't tell anybody because they might think I'm going soft.
Yeah. We still haven't seen the scene where Sophie discovers Craig's painting, have we?
Well, she's going out with a memorial to her, and I'm thinking there is one.
There is a memorial. There's quite a permanent memorial just around the corner from where you are. But anyway, Ken goes over to the shop and sees that Tracy's been crying. Oh, I felt so sorry for Tracy, even though we shouldn't feel sorry for her at all because it was her fault.
But, I know, it's funny, isn't it? Because they're like, Leanne, like, get over yourself, Leanne, stop crying. If I was there, I'd hit you too. Tracy crying over Maddie.
Don't say that.
Tracy crying over Maddie. Oh, poor Tracy, did the girl you murdered make you feel guilty?
I don't know what it is about Tracy.
Some people you just like and some people you don't. There's nothing you can do about it.
Anyway, so what happens next? Tracy goes to the bistro and then Robert comes in and she pretends to come on to Luke, doesn't she? But Luke walks off. He's like, no, I'm not interested.
Robert knows he's doing it. He just spends quite a lot of the time laughing at her.
Yeah, because he's trying to get back with her, isn't he?
He makes a Ponzi seafood dish for her, and she only ordered a salad, and then she gets mad and runs outside. And he follows her and finds her outside crying and says, I'm an evil, worthless cow. You don't even know what I've done.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have the cliffhanger. And then after the cliffhanger, we have the
I killed Maddie and Cal. You're just talking about Charlie, aren't you?
Yeah, and then she goes, yeah, let's go with that.
That was just like when Carl confessed to Stella that he'd killed Sunita, and she's just like, oh, you're just saying you did it because you were having an affair with her.
Which is worse, though, that I've got to tell you something, never mind, or that I've got to tell you something, here's the truth you're not going to believe.
I think that's worse. They tell them the truth, and then the person just doesn't listen.
And then, the worst part of that is not that they tell them the truth and the other person doesn't listen, it's the fact that they don't follow up with, no, seriously, I'm not... BSing you, this is actually what happened. They just go,
I really, really did.
Oh, yeah, I won't push it too hard then.
Well, before she gets a chance, Steph comes out and then kind of says, what are you doing out here? You need to get back in. So Tracy says, oh, yeah, everything's too much for me at the moment. It's with my mum dying and everything. So she gets him to make her a chicken Caesar salad and pretends to be okay.
But then, she's not.
She's not. She collapses again into tears when he goes back inside.
And then we have the stars of Tomorrow Today, where...
Oh, yeah. Two customers chatting up Robert.
Going, oh, are you single? And he says, technically, yes, but my heart belongs to another. And Tracy's sitting right there, obviously, and she says, you don't have a hope in hell. And walks out for some reason. I don't know why. And Steph says, you've got to go after her because she still hasn't paid again.
Yeah, she's crying again or something, I think, isn't she?
Amy makes Tracy a salad and she gets a phone call from Robert that she ignores, and then
Ken basically gives her a bit of a talk and says, look, I know you
he basically talks about love and about how he didn't appreciate Deirdre, and I hope, and like, I hope you find granted, what
hope
you're
you find
looking
true
for.
Love, la, la,
yeah,
la.
Blah, 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 blah.
Reach for the, reach for any the chance stars, that it whatever. Comes. Yeah. So she says, okay, right, I'm gonna go and do something.
I'm gonna win my man.
So she dresses herself up and goes to see Robert, and they basically end up having a good old snog, don't they?
Yeah.
They are now a couple.
Yeah. Hooray. And we find out they're a couple because we see them in the morning kissing each other, which is coronation speak for they shagged.
Yeah.
And then he goes off to work. Tracy tells Ken how incredible Robert is, and Ken is pleased for her. And then we get this unpleasant side story, which I really don't like.
Don't you?
No. Tracy sees this letter about Deirdre's life insurance policy, and Ken says that she's left a lot of money, but not to Tracy.
Yeah, there was £40,000 in total.
Well, no,
it was
£80,000. No, no, no.
Okay.
Tracy says, I don't care, and walks off. And then later on she says to Robert, I'm surprised I didn't get any of the money. And then she says to Ken,
she does a pun, doesn't she? Robert makes her some olive bread, and Tracy says, oh, is he all good in bread as well? I appreciate
that. As well as
that
what?
One.
Where did you shag last night then, on the bench?
Bread. Bed.
I get it, but she says you're good in bread as well, as if to say bed. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway.
Doesn't matter anyway.
As a connoisseur of amazing puns.
So Tracy tells Ken if Deirdre had left her money, she would have used it to buy Tony out of the business.
Yeah, she tells him earlier that she's not interested in the money, but then she spends the rest of the episode trying to get it, doesn't she, basically?
No,
I think she was. I think she was saying, oh, if Deirdre had left me some money, then I would use it to buy Tony out, hoping that Ken would say, okay, look, why don't you just have this? Then you can buy Tony out, which really, he maybe can't.
But honestly, though, is it really beyond the realm of her... Is she really overstepping her boundaries to say to Ken, okay, maybe Deirdre thought I was reckless and terrible, but honestly, if I had the money, I would use it to improve my situation.
Mm.
Is that really so bad to say? I would have said the same thing.
I guess so.
There's no way that you can have someone really close to you like that who dies, who leaves money to everybody but you and not feel a bit stung by it.
I suppose
so. I know that she, everyone hates her and feels like she deserves it, but... She's still going to react in the same way that most people would do, which is to be a bit upset and left out.
Do you think it's believable that Deirdre didn't leave her anything?
It depends on where she made the will, doesn't it?
Because they didn't do a proper will reading, did they, like they usually do?
People on soaps always seem to have either woefully unupdated wills that cause arguments or wills that are updated to the latest insult.
Yeah. Well... Tracy did get left pretty much everything from Blanche's will, didn't she? Maybe Deirdre was also thinking,
You've already had your share
of the Hunt family fortune. I don't know. But anyway, Amy is pleased to find out that she is now £40,000 the richer, but a bit.
Well, Deirdre left Amy and Simon £40,000 each.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what he revealed.
Yeah, so Amy is a bit miffed when she realises she can't get it until she's 80.
And so Amy's trying to persuade Tracy to give her the money, and Tracy starts joking that Grandma Deirdre would have wanted her to help her mum with her bills. And you said she's joking in
inverted commas. I think she is. I think she's trying to hint.
But I think you can joke and hint at the same time, but not be that serious about it. She knows that she's not getting the money anyway, so why would she bother trying to trick her kid? And anyway, even if Amy did get the money, it's still Tracy's money because she's her kid.
You don't think there's going to be some awful storyline where Tracy steals from her daughter or anything? Because I wouldn't put that past her, would you?
I think this is why I'm annoyed at this storyline. It's just a bunch of nonsense. I can't see what the point of it is.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
The thing is, the only thing I can think of is that you're right, and she will do something dodgy, because all the way through this, we haven't mentioned, Tony's just sniffing around and annoying Tracy.
Mm. And Liz.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Friday then, Tracy and Robert canoodling again. Oh, and then Robert drops it into the conversation that, oh, my flatmates are really annoying and they make the house smell of beer and everything. Oh, I wish I had somewhere else to live. And he wasn't hinting, but that was obviously soap. Script
soap
cue hitting. For maybe you can come there, maybe come and live with you. And Tracy goes, So she basically conspires to have Ken and Amy go and have a slap at meal at the bistro again for the millionth time that week, that evening. And she goes on about how lovely the food is, and Ken can see right through it, can't he?
Well, no, this annoys me because Ken says, you're only being nice to me because you want to get your hands on Deirdre's money.
He says that at the beginning, but yeah, then it comes
and
then out.
And then they get really, really annoyed at each other. And then almost, I can't remember what verbatim she said, but it sounded like, oh, well, never mind. And I just felt like that scene could have been written by the work experience kid, because it was like watching something out of drama school.
I don't remember. Feeling so bad about that. But Ken finds out, because Tracy does drop it again into the conversation, oh, Robert's looking somewhere to live. And then next wouldn't scene, Robert's nice... carting his stuff in, isn't he?
Well, she says, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have someone who lived in your house that cooked this for you all the time? And Ken immediately goes, oh, God, I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah.
Where you're going with this. I'm not stupid.
Well, they start to have a discussion about it, but I think whatever Ken was going to say there, Tracy would have had her own way, because by the end of the episode, Robert's carting his stuff in a box, isn't he? And Tracy's promising that it's only temporary, and anyway, she and Robert are made for each other.
Yeah, I felt really sorry for Ken at the end of the episode, because he was sitting there in his chair all by himself in his house that's been invaded by Tracy's good intentions, like, you know, and he's been talking about how much he misses Deirdre and everything, and he must now feel helpless and outnumbered in his own house.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, isn't it? He feels outnumbered. It's like when it was him and Deirdre together, and I know they weren't together for that long recently, it's like this still feels like our house and my daughter is living here, but now it's like I'm the spare part in this house.
Yeah.
And it's a bit too soon for to try and make your old relatives feel like that, really, isn't it?
Oh, I felt sorry for him. I don't feel often sorry for Ken, because he's a pompous arse, but I felt sorry for him today.
Oh, right. Should we talk
about... Does that mean I've got a heart not quite of stone anymore?
Yes, it does. Well done.
I'm sorry if you like Leanne, everybody, and I don't. I just don't like her.
Did you feel sorry for Lloyd or Andrew this week?
Oh, I don't... No.
Oh.
I just sometimes can't be bothered with these storylines where somebody does something out of character that's really horrible.
This is the thing, isn't it? I don't think Andrea would have done that. I mean, I know we've seen her...
Sneaking about
and thinking and talking to Jess on the phone before, and Lloyd's been a bit annoyed that she seems to put Jess in front of him. But basically what happens... what is it? Jess needs some money quickly because a flatmate's done a runner. And she needs £1,000 by the end of the day. So we see her promising that she's going to transfer this money to Jess, and then it later transpires that she has sold his what's the CD? I mean the disc. I don't even know what it's called. Robert and the something or other
Robert
CD.
And the Uptight.
Robert's and the Uptight CD.
Yeah. Well, Lloyd first of all was saying to her, look, you've got to let her grow up and live her own life and make her own mistakes. And she's like, well, look what you can't say that to me when you've been going through how to help Jenna, who got arrested. Remember that? Everyone's forgotten about that.
Yeah, I mean, he dropped everything, didn't he? I mean, she got annoyed because she had to kind of look after things for him while he was away. But I don't think she should have just automatically expected to sell this pride and joy disc collection.
It's silly. Nobody in real life would go... I'm just going to take your stuff then. He says, look, I've got 40 quid from Southern Records. You can have that. And she says, don't bother. You keep it. Why don't you keep it?
You wouldn't make me get rid of my things, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I'd just sell them behind your back.
I don't think I'd get anything quite as precious. I think if I thought that one of my discs was worth £1,000, maybe I'd think twice about it. But yeah, I thought that she was very out of character going and selling this disc behind his back. What is it?
It's a record.
It's an LP,
darling.
Isn't it? A record. It's from before my time.
Well, later on in the pub, Lloyd is saying, it's before your time. My first music was on a record.
I never had records.
Well, I had I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred. I had Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
And I think I also had the... WWF WrestleMania rap song.
Did you have a record player?
Yeah.
Maybe we did as well. I never had any records. I didn't buy any music until 1996.
I was so proud of myself when I had my little record player. It must have been second hand from my mum and dad. And I used to put it on the end of my bed, and I used to jump up and down on my bed listening to music.
My first single was Say You'll Be There by the Spice Girls.
Loser. I remember going to buy my first record in the shop. There's a newsagent in Woolston. It's just closed now. Mm. And they had a whole great big... load of shelves, and all the records were on the shelves, and because they're so big, it took up
loads of space.
And there's hardly any on there.
And now we don't even have CDs anymore.
I haven't bought any physical music for ages.
Anyway.
But that's why we can't sell our music collections.
If we don't have any.
No, exactly. So, anyway.
Lloyd basically says to Andrea later on in the episode, doesn't he? Look, oh, no, he doesn't. That's Wednesday.
Have I said that Jenna's going to be inheriting his valuable ones? That's where I was going with that.
And maybe.
And Andrea looks shifty. And then she says, I borrowed the money off mate.
Yeah, and Lloyd says at the end of the episode he's going to look through his episode and get all of his doubles collection. And everything.
Look through his collection.
Yeah, and sell the money.
At the end of the episode, he says, oh, look, I will give you the money from my collection.
Yeah, so she is looking very dodgy and shifty.
And then on Wednesday, he says, oh, it's really hard. I don't know which one to get rid of. And then he comes back down and says, oh, I've lost my Robert and the Uptights record, which, remember, is worth £1,000, everybody, which, funnily enough, is exactly the figure that you gave me the other day, Andrea. But I'm not going to dwell on that too much. And then he goes and looks for it again, still can't find it. On Friday, he's still moaning about the fact he can't find it and he wanted to give it to her, and says, oh, I'm going to take you to see DJ Brian. And this is when I said to you, I bet you DJ Brian will be playing a new song that he got. But no, I was wrong.
It could have gone that way, couldn't
it? He discovered from a phone call, Andrea goes to the loo because she
doesn't
sick.
Take her phone with her.
She doesn't. What else are you supposed to do in the toilet?
When Andrea, you go to the toilet, you take your phone with you.
You're a woman. You sit down for everything. You've got time to look at your phone, love.
A bit of Angry Birds or something.
Exactly. So while she's in the loo, her phone rings, he answers it, and then he doesn't tell her that it rung. And then later on, when they're talking about going to the gig, he says, oh, you buy something fancy, a designer for the outing. Why not? She says, I'm broke. And he says, no, no, you're not. You sold my record.
But he knows she gave it to Jess.
Oh, so stupid. And then she says, no, I'm entitled to that, in a way, because you said you were going to sell it. Mm. Andrea, he only said that after you'd already stolen it. You've forgotten that.
And he wouldn't have sold that one.
No, he said he was going to sell
that
one.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So she's even more stupid. Anyway, she says, I'm sorry. Jess begged me. You don't understand. Well, you do understand, but...
And then she tries to make amends by saying how much they cost on eBay. And I also did a little bit of a search on the internet and I couldn't find it. I found reference to it, but I don't think I found it being sold anyway. So it is a real thing. And anyway, and then she decides to go and pack up and does the old soap. Bye, I'm going.
She says, you'll never forgive me for this. I'm sorry, I'm going. What?
Yeah, where did that come from?
I don't get it.
It's like it's another case of somebody just decides to up and leave.
Where are you going?
In the middle of nothing. Where they go? Where's she going?
She lives with him, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Where's she
going? What are you going to do for your job? I mean, anyway, we could say this for so many people.
How did she end up being broke as well? Because her husband works on an oil rig, so he must earn quite a lot of money. They're getting divorced. Even if she says, no, I'm going to be selfless and I don't want any alimony off you or anything, she's still surely going to want half of, you know, she's going to want some money.
You'd have thought they might have some savings between them anyway.
It's all very well being all, I'm noble, I'm not going to take any money off of you. But then you can't, you've dug yourself into a situation where you can't even help your child with rent because you're so useless. You've got to steal off your boyfriend.
So she goes off and Lloyd's depressed and he's like, I don't even know whether I want her back or if I did.
I'm putting this in the same basket as Eileen inexplicably stealing a bracelet and Michael inexplicably deciding that that was fine. Mm. And Eileen inexplicably deciding to defraud Owen.
Yeah.
When she did his books.
It does. It seemed a little bit unbelievable. Maybe it was Andrea's time of the month.
I hate to tell you this, but being on your period doesn't make you just compulsively steal.
I thought I understood women.
No, you don't. I've had such a bad period today. I stole a record of my boyfriend.
So I assume we're not going to see Andrea for a little bit, but she is going to be back.
Why don't they just say, oh, Lloyd, I love you, but my actress has got to go on holiday for a while, so I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, more believable. Yeah, I feel sorry for Lloyd, but it's all a bit of a weird way that the storyline's turned out, isn't it?
I'd be way more mad than he was if somebody stole from me £1,000 worth of stuff.
I would never do it, don't worry.
No, but he was all like, oh, I'm really angry, I can't talk to you. I'd be like, no, I'm really angry. Sit and listen to me rant for several hours about how much of a scumbag you are. And I'm going to, like...
But I don't think Andrew, I think the way Coronation Street is written is if he'd stolen something from her, then he would, because empowered women and all that. And
it's sexist.
She would have been nagging and he would have had to have stayed there and listened. But I think if he'd started to have a rant at her, she wouldn't have stayed there and listened to
Yeah, it. I do think if he would have had a rant, it would have just come across as an arsehole.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think the thing about Lloyd is that he does seem like a right, when he gets his something gets on his goat, like with all that play the white man stuff, he just comes across as unreasonable, even if he's in the right, because of just the way he's, you know, just how grumpy
he gets
about things.
Quite defensive about things, yeah, I know.
So I think if they just thought, we'll just have to save Lloyd here and just not have him say anything.
Mm. Anyway, she'll be back. Shall we talk about the not the best storyline of the week now? The street racer storyline.
Street racer. Yeah. Let's make Luke a character.
Oh, no, it's just Maria. Let's give Maria something to do. Oh, blimey. No, I get that they're
I
a couple.
I really want to like Luke more than I
so
do.
So do I.
And I want him to be funny, but he's not really funny.
I want to like Luke more than I do. And I want Maria to have a good storyline. I want them to have a good storyline together. But it was just classic, like, getting the wrong end of the stick 101, wasn't it, this week, basically?
I do feel like this week was just cliche after cliche. I feel like they just,
again,
got their bag of cliche. Maybe we've been doing this too long. Maybe 3 years is the maximum that anybody can do.
Hang on a minute, I think they're reusing something here.
Wait, this isn't purely original stuff.
After 55 years, you should still be expected to come up with week after week with quality novel programming. I'm
this isn't original human drama. People have gone through this before.
Anyway, he wants to buy a stock racing car, doesn't he, this week?
This could get good, though. Apart from this boring initial part.
It could.
It could be quite interesting.
I'm sure there's some kind of accident on the horizon.
I can't wait.
So he turns down a holiday with his mates in Ibiza because he wants to save up for this track car. And Maria seems to think it's a bit weird. But it's good that he's got goals.
Steph is not happy about this. And she doesn't really explain why, other than she thinks it's a waste of money on Monday. But we find out why later.
Yeah. So Luke thinks that Maria's up to something, basically, before the end of the episode. So that's put a little shadow of doubt in Steph's mind. I didn't appreciate it with Steph this week. She was just being a bit of a naggy, suspicious, jump into conclusions kind of, don't you think?
The old, I think someone's having an affair, so I'm going to confront them. Oh no, I look like a prat.
Yeah.
Story.
I prefer Steph when she's like the comedy relief, not when she's like the naggy.
Well, anyway,
naggy, suspicious
she confronts
sister.
Maria on Wednesday and says, I'm worried that Luke thinks you're going off him, so be nicer to him. And she says, you know, it's none of your business.
Basically.
And on Friday, Luke says to Maria, let's meet up for lunch. And she says, I can't. I've got stuff to do. And then in the cafe, Steph hears Maria saying, oh yeah, I'll meet you in the car park. Don't worry. Luke doesn't
know about it. It's a suspected thing at all.
So she scurries off and says, Luke, Maria's meeting another bloke. And she said all this stuff. And he says, no, you heard her wrong. You must have done. Then he can't concentrate and he gets really mad and starts throwing a spanner around. So he goes back to Steph and says, what should we do? She says, we've got to go confront them. So they go together in the car and they see Maria talking to a man. And immediately Steph jumps out going, I knew all along you were terrible and you've got a bad history with blokes. You're cheating on my brother.
I could see, like, Anna doing that. That's the kind of thing she would do, isn't it? Hey, what are you doing with him? But no, it just turns out Maria has been, because she's so nice, she's bought Luke
his car. Where'd she get this money from?
I don't know. But anyway, so she gets in a strop with him and walks home, and then he stalks her so much so that she eventually agrees to get into the car with him, and then it breaks down because it's such a hunk of junk. But because he's a mechanic, he fixes it. And basically they make up. I kind of...
That
was my notes. They make up. They make up.
But Luke is annoyed at Steph for meddling in his affairs.
But she had a reason.
Well, she tells Maria when Luke's not there that last time... that she doesn't want him to have a car. She wants him to sell it. It's stupid and a bad idea. Because the last time he had one, he got into an accident. And he cracked his ribs and broke his head or whatever. I don't remember.
Yeah.
And Maria looks a bit like, oh yeah, I forgot that stock car racing could be a bit dangerous. She obviously didn't really know anything about it. She just jumped in there.
Yeah. But do you think that is what is leading towards him racing and having an accident? It seems
is
like
Is it going to be a live episode accident?
No, because the live episode apparently isn't going to have any big stunts in. It's going to be
what
about...
What the hell's the point?
Drama and comedy and scripting. That's okay. I'm sure that's going to happen.
I'm totally fine with that because I don't know how they would pull off a giant stunt as well as doing everything else.
Do you know who else has been in a stock car accident in Coronation Street? I think I'm
Rover.
Getting this right. No, Sally Webster. She and Kevin used to do stock car racing.
Yeah, there was that terrible accident that time when they first met, when he splashed her.
Yeah, exactly.
And got her boots wet.
There was another storyline where they got involved in stock car racing, but that was long enough ago that we can have this storyline again.
Have a new storyline without us going, oh God, the old stock car racing. They had this one in 1986.
Now, the next storyline is one that could have been more interesting if they'd only kept it up for the rest of the week, because it was left on a big cliffhanger and then nothing happened with it. Because basically, on Monday, Sally is getting some wedding planning advice from... Well, she tries to get it from Rita, but then Mary invites herself with a massive folder, Mary the Wedding Fairy.
I like
fairy,
Mary.
Isn't she?
Mary. I like Mary with fairy. A wedding file. Because every time anyone gets married now, I think it's going to be a Coronation Street tradition that Mary gets a big folder out.
Yeah, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. She says, doesn't she? It's sad. But she just basically gets on everyone's wick, because it's funny. So she suddenly manages to bundle her off at the end, doesn't she? And throughout the whole meeting... They've been kind of bringing up Kevin a little bit, and Sally's very defensive every time that his name comes up, and Sophie's starting to think, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Have you and Dad had a falling out or anything? And Sally refuses to answer and bumbles off, basically. Sophie has a chat in the pub and says, look, do you want to get married to Tim? And Sally's about to answer. Mary comes in again with some hen and stag night brochures. And we get to find... I thought this was the funniest thing of the week when they were talking about cartoon characters, weren't they? Because you can dress up as your cartoon character and jump out the plane or something with a parachute. And Sally says, oh, Pink Panther was what I used to watch. And then Mary starts saying, I couldn't watch that because my mum didn't used to agree with me watching things with talking animals in. And Sally goes, well, Pink Panther didn't talk. That's the whole point of it. So Mary's like... Really? I never knew that. I always have to watch it with the volume down so that Mum couldn't hear me. I thought that was quite
I love
funny.
Mary's little story. As long as she doesn't get too far into them, they're quite funny.
Yeah, just as the little anecdote about the crazy things that her mum used to do when she was little. I can't remember. Is Mary's mum dead now? I can't remember.
I don't think we know.
I think she said that she was dead, but then it turned out she wasn't. I can't remember.
I don't know whether I want her to appear in it.
I don't think she'd ever be able to live up to our expectations.
Yeah, exactly. She'd have to be played by an exceptional actress.
Yeah, and have an exceptionally good script.
Just like Fat Brenda.
Yeah, will we ever see her? Who knows?
I could only accept Fat Brenda being played by some kind of multi-Oscar nominated.
Well, Fat Brenda, there is a Fat Brenda on Twitter. Somebody should make a Twitter of Mary's mum.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious.
The funniest thing that I remember with Mary's mum on Coronation Street was when she kidnapped Norris in the house in the in the countryside, and she had Norris held up there. And then Norris comes upstairs, and we hear Mary talking to her mum, and then she's just talking to herself in the mirror. Psycho Mary was best Mary, I think. Anyway. The storyline ends on Monday with Sophie saying, look, what's gone on? Do you still love Kevin? And Sally confessing that she snogged him. Don't tell Tim. And it's like, oh, brilliant. What's going to happen with this the rest of the week? And the answer is nothing. Ding. Nothing. Where's Tim? Is Tim here? Was Tim here at the moment, or has he gone off somewhere?
He hasn't gone off. He went off and he came back again.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So this is the sort of thing that I'd like, okay, I want to find out more about this week, but sadly didn't get the chance. Oh, well, this got to come out.
So you'll save it up, fun times next week.
Yeah, exactly. So that was quite good. Gemma, Rover.
What?
Rover is next. You like dog storylines. Tell
like
us
dogs.
About Rover Returned.
We kept getting ourselves confused because we found out that the dog's name is Cookie, and now I can't stop calling her Cookie.
I know, and now actually it's called
Boo
Boo. Her
name is Cookie.
We also got confused with this one because we thought for some reason it was going to be to do with the Lloyd and Andrea storyline, didn't it? Because it all kind of started off in the cab offered together. But anyway...
Anyway,
Rover has got to go back on Wednesday. Did you empathise with Steve?
Yeah.
Of course.
I wouldn't want to give her up. But then again, I would always feel sympathetic to the owners and think, if it was my dog, I'd want to give it back. So I'll go and get my own dog, maybe.
Yeah.
So anyway, he loves Rover so much. We know that she's been very helpful for him to get over his depression, really. So he's spending time with her and pampering her on Wednesday, before he gives her back, and Kirk's very supportive, he gives him a hug and everything.
Steve doesn't really appreciate that.
And telling him to get a new pet. So he takes her back to her owners, comes back on Wednesday, miserable and alone.
He has a cry on the stairs, doesn't he, with his little squeaky toy. So
on
sad.
Friday, he's sniffing the pillow that Rover sat on with her bare arse. And let's not forget that dogs don't have bum cheeks.
Well,
I don't. I like dogs, but dog, I don't like their literal bum holes.
I wouldn't
put my face and smell deeply where it sat. And also, probably the hair would get up your nose.
Yeah.
So that was really.
I wonder whether he does that and sniffs Michelle's pillow now. She's off an island at the moment, isn't she? I think.
Yeah, but does Michelle do the thing where that dogs do and scooch across the carpet with her bum, scraping along? Oh, that hit the spot.
She doesn't leave things quite so
that's
fragrant
why she's
as
always so
Rover
angry.
Does.
Maybe that's why she folds her arms so deliberately, because she knows if she let them go, she'd just be scratching herself.
Maybe.
She needs to get her glands done. Anyway. He's moping around on Friday and letting his chores pile up, which involves a hilarious amount of cheese and onion crisps.
Yes.
Which, because ineptitude in Coronation Street means ordering too much of the wrong thing.
Yes.
Anyway, he has a squeaking and a scratching at the door, and it's Rover. She's returned.
He's happy. He gives her a kiss and a cuddle, and then he
tells her to be quiet.
Comedy dog hiding for the rest of the episode.
It doesn't take very long for Liz to hear the barking. And says,
I thought it was funny when Lloyd's phone goes and Steve's like, oh, turn it up, I love that ringtone.
I know, he's so happy when Rover's around. So she says, there's a dog there, isn't there? You've got to give her back up. And he says, oh, please, Mum, let me have her for a bit longer. She goes, all right then. But before anything else happens, in comes Rover's real owner.
Steve hides behind the bar.
She sees him and says, oh, there's Boo Boo, my
lovely
Boo Boo.
Yeah, she seems like a bit of a crazy animal nut, doesn't she?
No, I think she seems like... She doesn't appreciate the true...
Well, no, she's a bit
true,
of a...
like, inner essence of Rover.
I think she's not on the same level as Rover, as Steve is, but she seems like, oh, give me a hug, la boo-boo.
No,
whoa,
I think she seems like the sort of person who... She said boo-boo, and she was, like, being nice about it, but she's saying to Steve, oh, don't pamper her, don't give her chicken and things.
I think if they wanted to... maybe you're right, but I think if they really wanted to make it look like Rover's going off to a worse place.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I just think that Steve knows that she doesn't appreciate Rover like he appreciates Rover.
Yeah, so he's sad at the end of the episode again. What do you think he's gonna?
I don't know.
He's got to get her back, hasn't he?
Well, we know that he owns the dog. Cookie, yeah. Who plays Rover, is
Simon Gregson's
dog.
I hope he gets her back.
So maybe they just said, look, let's try this out. If you really want your dog to be in the bloody show because you want extra money or something, let's do an audition. And they did a little audition and the dog was fine. And so, but they'd already written it in. So it was like a trial period.
Mm.
And then now she's going off to come back again to be in it permanently.
Do you think that Rover's just going to keep running off and coming back to the Rovers again?
Think,
and the owner says...
Oh.
Right, just maybe it's best if you have it. Or is it going to be like the owner is involved in some horrible car accident or something? And
I think this is going to take a...
Rover is flung from the car window into Steve's arms.
Maybe, yeah. Very sinister turn.
Yeah.
Maybe
the owner is in stock car racing and she's the one that has the head-on collision with Luke.
That is probably exactly... They're going to have to change that now. We've leaked the script.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think it's... I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out that... Instead of making a big deal about how much he loves the dog, it would be cruel. Beyond cruel.
She'll be back with a tail between her legs, just like Andrea.
There's no reason why she can't just be in it every now and then like Eccles. I mean...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the end.
Character
of that.
That is the end. I find it a bit difficult to have character of the week this week.
I don't know who to pick. I'm looking at all the stories and I can't.
Yeah, it's the same with me. I mean,
anyone.
It's
like
it's Tracy or.
I'm gonna just pick Rover because she's cute and she made me look and go, oh, look how cute she is. Or maybe Steve because he was funny when he said about the ringtone and stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing hugely that stood out for me. I mean, Jane Danson was fantastic again, as much as whatever we think of the character.
Never
going to
pick Leanne as
jolly
my
good
character
job.
Of the week.
So she was good, but also I thought Tracy was as well, particularly at the beginning of the week when Tracy was getting upset about Maddie. It'd be between those two for me anyway. Can't pick. Right, that is it. Let's move on to our next section, which is the cabin. So, in the cabin this week, there has been loads of Coronation Street news this week because of the big press day that was on Tuesday. But as we are, of course, a spoiler-free podcast, we can't talk about pretty much any of it. We have already revealed today that Jenny Bradley is coming back, which is, of course, the most exciting news that's come out of it, and everyone's very happy about that. But we don't want to talk about that anymore now. The only thing we can really talk about is the fact that the date of the live episode has been announced, the 23rd of September. So in just over a month's time, we've got an hour-long episode, and I don't know whether they said what time it is, but we've got that to look forward to. Apparently, according to Stuart Blackburn, it was full of shocks and turns and twists that will change the landscape of the street forever and cause ripple effects for years to come.
But if there's not a stunt, I don't care.
Well, it says that, yeah, it says there's not going to be big stunts. It's just going to be
human drama.
Human drama and things. And still thinking about what we... when we talked to Jack last week and said that some work has been done to Gail's house, and that's still going to be quite exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
I can't really get my head around how there's not going to be a stunt, but there's damage, I assume, damage.
I think it just means, I mean, having like a gun go off, for example, isn't a big stunt, is it? I mean, there's just not going to be any car flipping or tram crashing or fires or anything of that nature.
No.
I do hope it's going to be good. You can never be too sure.
Someone's going to die. Not Gail.
No.
Maybe Gail dies. Maybe there's like, maybe the work Jack was talking about was a little body shape on the floor with like a suspicious bowl cut hairstyle.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd like to say it doesn't seem to be leading up to anything at the moment, apart from the Platt stuff. But then things like the tram crash,
that
wasn't
so much.
Nothing was leading up to that. The tram crash just happened, and then things
maybe
came out
Simon
of it,
hulks out and starts punching through the bricks and mortar.
But the sad thing about all of this
maybe
is...
maybe somebody like graffitis. Maybe Craig does a massive graffiti.
Live graffiti.
Live art.
Anyway.
What?
23rd of September, I don't even know whether I'm going to be here for it. That's the tragic thing.
Michael, you probably will be alive.
I don't know whether I'll be at home to watch it live. It's very sad.
I'll watch it without you and text you. Okay? No. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Because that week is when it is my school's residential trip. And I'm supposed to be going on it. So I'm supposed to be away from home all of that week, which is terrible. But I was talking to some of the other teachers about it a few weeks ago, and it's possible I might just do a half week. So I'm still going to try and engineer it. My plan at the moment is that I go to this trip Monday to Wednesday evening so that I can hopefully get back in time for it.
I can't believe that September's just 2 weeks away.
I know. Don't say that. Don't say back to school.
So, but yeah, but it's weird because it's Wednesday. So if you do a half week, you're still going to be there on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'll be there on Wednesday, but then come back early Wednesday evening, so at least I can do it. But Gemma, next news.
I can't believe the excitement that I feel about this news, and it's not even award shows, and you know how much I like them. This is even more exciting than that, because one of my favourite actresses, Georgia May Foote, who plays one of my favourite characters, Katie, who I can't believe left because she was so amazing. Everything she was in was cool. She is going to be in my favourite show that is in Coronation Street, which is Strictly Come Dancing. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Is it Strictly
Come Dancing?
It's not Strictly Dancing on Ice or anything.
No.
Is that even a thing? I don't know.
No, it's not.
Anyway, as you can tell, I'm not that bothered about this.
It's news.
I don't watch that.
Don't watch Strictly.
I don't care about
too bothered about Georgia May Foote.
But she's going to be in it.
I still wish her luck as ex-Coronation Street person, but I won't be tuning in specially just to watch her. But people listening to this might be, so.
Congratulations.
And it's Celebrity Big Brother starting soon as well, so who knows whether any Coronation
Street people
are going to be in there. For what? Getting a role in it?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's the news for that. And also in pretty non-news, Nikki Patel, who used to play Amber, is going to be in the West End. She's going to be... Actually, I'd quite like... Maybe
don't
like
say
to see
this is non-news. This is good. This is an actor who was in Coronation Street actually going on to do actual proper acting, not fanning around on shows.
Celebrity reality show.
Or like what they wore when they went to go pick up another pointless award.
It is good. She's going to be in a comedy play called Future Conditional at the Old Vic Theatre in London. And Future Conditional is a tense in grammar. But
tell me more.
Future Conditional... Actually, I can't remember.
You don't remember. Shall
it's
I
conditional.
Just say...
It's like I will maybe would do something. I don't know.
Anyway, Amber... I mean, Nikki Patel is going to play Alia, a young Pakistani refugee who is the newest member of Britain's Educational Research Board with a radical solution for schools to restore the nation's place in the World Education League. But she faces the challenge of convincing the system to take lessons from a schoolgirl.
See, as a teacher, that doesn't sound I'd be almost funny. Interested. It doesn't sound
funny.
Where's
the comedy there? Of that? Ha, refugee! Ha, ha, ha!
I'm sure they can make it funny.
What's funny about that?
I would as a
no,
teacher,
but what I'm saying
quite like
is
to see this.
That synopsis, you could have told me this is a drama.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is a heart-wrenching drama that's going to make people cry. And I would have gone, oh, it sounds very harrowing.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Go and see it. It's at the Old Vic Theatre. I haven't written down where it is or when it is, but it is coming later this year, maybe, or next year. I can't remember.
At some point in the future.
Yes. So
at some place.
Good luck to Nikki Patel and also Georgia May Foote and all of our Coronation Street stars for their live episode. Right, let's move on and finish off with some feedback.
Feedback time. Sienna?
Yes.
Says, I have a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that Leanne and Zidane are going to become a couple. Oh.
Yeah, we mentioned this a little bit last week, didn't we?
Don't sow those seeds.
As unlikely as it sounds...
Yeah, it's still quite likely for Coronation Street.
Because he's sniffing around, isn't he? He's like being the friend of Simon and...
Yeah, he is. He's like a father figure for him.
I can imagine them, like... Even if they don't become a couple, like, one of them will make a move on the other one or something.
Oh, my God.
Like, what are you doing? But I do hope not. I do.
Yeah, don't... Yeah, that makes me feel sick as well.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Stuart Blackburn is known for putting people together that maybe shouldn't be. I mean, I remember when he was first announced to be the producer. Well, that's one of the things that they said about him when he was in charge of Emmerdale. He just made random couples up. And I don't know. We'll hope not as well, Sienna. Let's move on to the next person, which is Kerry, who says, I'm British. I've lived in the US since 1994, and I had no idea about Sarah Harding's music career.
Kerry, I live in England, and I didn't know much about it, so don't
worry. Don't worry about it. I can assure you that it wasn't her stellar fame that made her an unpopular character. When I first saw the scenes, I had the same reaction as Gemma. And me as well. Yes, see? It wasn't just because she's famous.
It's because she's crap at acting. And yeah. It's, funnily enough, quite an important part of being in a soap.
You've got to be able to act.
You do.
Unless you're in one of those Australian soaps. Can I say that?
Or American ones.
Or any soaps other than Coronation Street. We need good actors on.
Right.
On Corey.
Rebecca said, enjoyed the podcast as always. My character of the week was also Sally, as I enjoyed her comedy scenes, and the scene with Carla was also good as well. The Carla storyline is also interesting to me too, and I also like Kathy too. Enjoyed your interview with Jack, and looking forward to more from the teasers Jack gave us. The events of next month.
Yes, me too. What happened to Carla this week? We could have really done with a bit more of that this week, couldn't we, to pull things up a little bit?
Oh, to just cheer everyone up with Carla's exploits.
Misery gambling.
Yeah.
But there's nothing with Kathy and Carla and Roy. I hope we get more of that next week. That would have helped. We'll finish off with Tibor's email, who says bonjour. Because we were in France. Gail certainly seems to have scored points against Eileen when she caught Michael trying to break into the pawn shop, which was something Eileen pushed him into. I really do think they'll get back together. We should start taking bets on when.
Yeah.
Maybe the live episode in September?
How long is it going to be? An hour?
An hour long.
Oh.
I don't think that's the sort of thing that they would have in the live episode.
Oh, I can imagine it, but it would only be very brief, sort of like a let's unite against... Callum, he's trying to kill us with his gun. Why don't we put aside our differences? Should we just have a quick snog? Yeah.
The live episode needs to be full of shocks and having those two reunite.
Like Michael dying.
No, don't say that.
That'd be shocking, wouldn't it?
By the end of the year, for sure, I reckon they'll be together before Christmas. But I don't know whether it'll be as soon as September. The email continues. The big hole on the bracelet gate story was.
Actually, can I just say that. If it's something to do with the Platts in the live episode, I think that they will be together by then.
How do you?
Because then it's going to make more drama because there's going to be more characters involved. Either Michael's going to be involved in it because he's with Gail, or he's going to be sucked into it because he's still got feelings for Gail, and by the end of it, there will be some kind of rekindling rumour.
I suppose so, yeah. He could be. Okay, the big hole in the bracelet gate story was that at the start of it, Liz had been having a natter with Eileen in the cab office before the nasty woman was in being a cow. I really think that Liz would have showed off the bracelet to Eileen as a lovely gift, so that when they found the bracelet in the cab office later, Eileen would have realised it was or wasn't Liz's. Yes, good point.
Bracelet gate, ugh.
No, I can't remember what I thought about that. It was alright, but yes, you could be right there, Tibor. Didn't Bethany get the money for the Paris trip from Callum? So now Callum and Sarah have split once Sarah had found out the truth about Callum, but it's still okay for Bethany to go on that trip, financed by the local drug dealer. I know the trip is probably prepaid, but it did seem strange.
It does now you put it like that.
Yeah, it would have been prepaid, I suppose.
You can't possibly organise a trip that doesn't the kids bring their money on the day.
I think Sarah might have thought it was good to have Bethany out of the picture with all, everything that was going on with Callum at the moment. Maybe she just wants literally to get her away from him, possibly, but I think it's going to leave Bethany in Callum's debt, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Tibor also says she's excited about what we were talking about in last week's Cabin Extra.
Secret.
Can't talk about it now. Right, and that is it for the end of our third year anniversary podcast, our special episode. Hope you all enjoyed it. We're still recording this on Friday night, so we haven't even had our interview with Sally Ann. I'm sure it's lovely. Thank you very much again. Thank you for joining us, Sally.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sal, yeah. And you can come on whenever you want to again. When you're allowed to talk about more, feel free to come back and join us. But that is it for now. We'll be back next week, as always. If you want to email us anybody, we're at conversationstreet@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on our blog, conversationstreet.podbean.com. A review on iTunes is always welcome. And if, like Sally Ann Matthews, you want to talk to us on Skype or even leave us a message, we're there at Conversation Street. We're on Conversation Stewart on Twitter and Facebook, Conversation Street. So many ways to contact us. We always like it when you do.
We love it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.